want first of all to welcome you to these training sessions in the way of the mystic. Welcome to a journey and to an adventure which we shall be sharing together during the next 6 weeks. And may I say at once that the value and effectiveness of this course will be determined not by the imparting of ideas or a mass of information from speaker to listener, but by the contribution of each individual taking part. What is remembered in the way of information is unimportant. What we do together is vital. We shall come to this in some detail later. I have described this as a journey, as an adventure, and also as a sharing. This sharing will involve every one of us, and it will be primarily non-verbal. We shall not take refuge in words, nor shall we allow them to screen us off, as it were, from reality. All too frequently, religious language is employed consciously or unconsciously in this way. The level of sharing which we should experience is quite independent of words. And it is made possible by, and indeed effected through, an inner awakening. The awakening of a faculty latent in every one of us, a faculty both for giving at the highest level of our being and for accurate perception. May I repeat that? A capacity for giving at the very highest level of our being and a capacity for accurate perception. And let me say here that the sharing towards which we shall be working is not a sharing exclusive to a group or groups, for that is what constitutes a holy huddle, but a sharing that is without limit and non-selective. A sharing without limit, without limitations, and non-selective. To this we shall also come back later. Through the systematic application of certain disciplines, we shall be working together for what St. Paul calls the opening of the eye of the heart to the truth as it is in Jesus. Now, these are two very important concepts, and I'll repeat them once more. The opening of the eye of the heart to the truth as it is in Jesus. The word work should be noted here, for the journey will be no drifting idly down a stream, so to speak, looking around from bank to bank for possible exciting experiences, but a working together to create straight paths towards a clearly defined object. If you are meeting in a group, you, that is each individual, have a unique contribution to make to that group, to its growth in receptivity and response. The extent of your group sharing will be determined, first of all, by each one becoming aware of his or her proper significance and indeed importance. This is the psychology behind our thinking, behind our moving forward together, a proper estimate of our own significance and importance. All who take this journey are equal, and we travel together. Your significance and contribution has nothing whatever to do with how much you or others may think you know about mysticism or about meditation or indeed about anything. It has to do with the unique potential which exists within each one and which, with conscious cooperation, can be realized and shared through this adventure. And here we should be aware of a very present pitfall into which pilgrims on this journey so very frequently fall. not only at the beginning, but all along the way. For a very long time, there has been a strong tendency in the Western world, both secular and religious, to equate education with the grasping of ideas by the intellect. And I think here grasping is probably a very appropriate word. Grasping of ideas by the intellect. The gain, if such it can be called, from this concept of education is that the so-called educated are in varying degrees frequently little more than walking encyclopedias. The loss, and it is a very heavy one indeed, is that such information is all too often totally divorced from the business of living. In this course, we are concerned primarily with the business of living and learning to operate on a level which enables us to live life as it was intended in the divine plan. All that we do in this course is related to that. Ideas, intellectual definitions, and concepts are therefore secondary. They follow, they do not precede. The pitfall is to require a reversal of this process. But, cries out part of me, a part we shall look at later, I must have ideas first. I must learn about all this and then do it, and then I shall feel quite safe. And herein lies the great danger, a danger which Jesus indicated again and again through his method of teaching, that is, the parabolic method. To grasp an idea, a concept, that is, to understand with the head, is not to know, it is to know about. It is not to know, it is to know about. Therefore, on the pilgrimage upon which we are now embarking, the very first lesson we have to learn is simply this: how to learn. How to learn. St. Bernard was once asked the question, what is God? In his reply he said, he is the one before whom all words recoil, ungraspable by the human intellect. Ungraspable by the human intellect. St. Augustine wrote, there is in the mind no knowledge of God except that it does not know him. There is in the mind no knowledge of God except that it does not know him. F.C. Happold, in The Journey Inward, quotes an anonymous writer as follows: God is neither perceptible to our senses, nor is he conceivable by our intellects, but he is sensible to the heart. If you are following the course at home by yourself, be assured that you are not alone. You can do more than just tell yourself this. You can without doubt experience its reality. The very fact that many individuals and groups in a variety of places against varying backgrounds have elected to follow this course creates a very powerful link between all the participants. A unity of intention is created, and this makes possible a deep sharing, a holy communion, concerning which the separations of time and space are irrelevant. Even now, as you listen, this receiving and sharing can be put into effect. By a simple visualization technique and a directing of our wills, we can now do this. So let us practice this together. Let us take a step towards promoting the knowledge of the heart. where you are at this very moment, see yourself with your eyes closed, if you wish, as linked at the level of the heart within a network of light. This network embraces all those who are taking the journey. If you find visualization difficult, just hold the awareness of this fact in your heart. Let me now quote the words of one who saw very clearly the reality behind this exercise. Remember the golden threads which go from heart to heart. Let me repeat these words once more. Then in the silence, let us be aware from the heart of this reality. Remember the golden threads which go from heart to heart. The attention may quickly wander, just bring it back to this simple exercise. We have now made a tangible link. And this could well become the opening exercise of each of our sessions. What in fact has been happening is that in this brief period, we have been relating ourselves to and experiencing something of that great mystery which is called in the New Testament the body of Christ. There are many substitutes, there are many counterfeits, that this simple exercise practiced regularly can open the eyes of our hearts to perceive this eternal reality, the body of Christ, the body of light. But remember, and again remember, first the exercise, the glimpse, as it were, from the heart of the reality, and afterwards the explanation, afterwards the thinking through. And persevere with this exercise. The articulation, the thinking through, will follow later. For as we begin to readjust the relationship of heart and intellect, and this is what is beginning to happen as we practice this discipline, both faculties will steadily increase in power and facility. Perceptions will sharpen as we readjust the relationship of the two. And if you can begin to do this and create a new habit, you will also begin to move into an entirely new world, indeed into a school of learning. We now take another step in our approach to those spiritual disciplines which, as we have said already, awaken the heart to the truth as it is in Jesus. These disciplines are the disciplines of contemplative meditation. Already, we've begun to practice them. The word meditation conveys a great variety of meanings to a great variety of people. In the West, particularly during the past 20 years, the word has been invested with new and sometimes exotic significance. To some, meditation means increasing and concentrating the activity of the brain. Increasing and concentrating the activity of the brain. To others, it means the very opposite. And for some, it has to do with the use of the imagination. What does it mean in the context of the journey upon which we're now embarking? The key, and this is all we need to think about at this stage, is in the word contemplation. To contemplate is to see into things in a particular way. To contemplate is to see into things in a particular way. Contemplative meditation, therefore, is the practice of looking from a particular perspective. Looking with the eyes of the heart. A very different thing from looking with our physical eyes. For whereas they see only externals, the eyes of the heart, once opened, enable, first of all, true self-observation, not introspection, note, not introspection. Then an accurate perception of other people, and note again, without judgment. Then insight into contemporary society, into the created world, and into the great movements of history which shape the destiny of man. I'll repeat these. The eyes of the heart, once opened, enable first of all true observation without introspection, true self-observation without introspection. Then an accurate perception without judgment of other people. Then insight into contemporary society, into the created world, and into the great movements of history which shape the destiny of man. There is nothing which can elude or escape this true seeing. It is a great, breathtaking widening of horizons, embracing the past, the present, and the future. There is nothing outside of it. And we begin from just where we are. And remember, I said earlier, with a true appreciation of our own significance and importance. It is a false humility which hides behind, "I have nothing to offer." If you say that, you're speaking from the wrong I. You're speaking from the wrong I. And as we shall observe later on, we have many I's. I have much to offer. I am of tremendous significance in the economy of God. And we have to learn to be able to say that with conviction in the right way from the depths of true humility. I am significant. I am important. Now, the very fact of coming across the difficulty that most of us face in trying to say that should show us something about ourselves. And if it does, then we're already practicing true self-observation. The eyes of the heart are beginning to open. We begin to see. We're on the move. We're moving forward on this journey. We're drawing ourselves out of the stagnation that religion as such so often holds us in. We're shaking ourselves free of shackles. we're, if you like, using an entirely different psychology. And we're removing all those things, those screens behind which we so frequently hide. You may have heard the story of the Irishman who was asked by a fellow traveller on the platform of a London railway station, "Please tell me, how do I get to Dublin?" "Well," he replied, "to begin with, I wouldn't start from here." Now, we start from where we are, as we are, with what we have. Where we are, as we are, with what we have. So the first stage is to find within ourselves the point of all true beginnings, the still center. Before we begin our meditation, I'm going to ask you, if you are in a group, I'm going to ask the groups to just stand in a circle, if you can, and hold hands together just for a few moments in silence. Those of you who are alone, just link with us. Visualize yourself as joining in a circle, holding hands in fellowship with those who, with you, are moving forward together. So we symbolize our unity of purpose. Let us now all sit down. And it is important that you are sitting quite comfortably in your chair. Now, to be comfortable does not mean that you are somnolent. And we combine alertness with relaxation. If you can, hold the back and the head erect. If it isn't possible, if it doesn't come easily, if there is some reason why you find it difficult, then just find the most relaxed and the most alert position that is right for you. I suggest if you're trying to do it in an easy chair, you look around the room and find one that is less easy. And don't fall into the trap of trying to sit cross-legged on the floor if you've never done it before, because you'll be in agony within a very few minutes. The natural way for a Westerner is to sit in a chair with a straight back. And if you can, do have the soles of your feet placed firmly against the floor, probably better without your shoes. You feel in touch with Mother Earth. And you'll probably find that to have the hands flat upon the thighs comes naturally, or just relaxed, cupped together in your lap. Now, having gone thus far, you may well find now that you're all tensed up in an officially relaxed position. So we have to begin a process of relaxation. And remember once more that we are all, though separated, contributing each to the other. As one seeks to relax, so there is a unity of intention, and we are helping one another, sharing energy. Be aware of your breathing, because this does help. And as we breathe out, so we begin at the top end of the body, and we breathe out, relaxing the skin of the face and the scalp, breathing away the tensions. And then breathe away from the shoulders, dropping the shoulders as you do so, as you breathe out, dropping the arms. Breathe away from the chest and the tummy, relaxing the tummy muscles. Nobody's looking to see whether you have a large tummy, just let it relax. Breathe away the tensions from the thighs, let the thighs relax. And the legs. Make sure your hands are not clenched together in an effort to relax the rest of the body. And now for a few moments, just breathe out as though you were breathing through the whole body surface. You may well feel that the skin tingles as you breathe out, relaxing as you do so, from the crown of the head to the tip of your toes. And if you're aware of any particular part having tensed again, just consciously relax it. Don't struggle or fight, but as you become aware of tension reasserting itself, let it go. And now just observe your body in your mind's eye. We spoke earlier of having a proper estimate of ourselves. Look at your body. It is a beautiful thing. It may not be as you would wish it to be. It may be defective in parts, but it is God-given. It has its own individual, particular beauty. So in a moment or two of silence, just observe your body and love yourself. That is your body. And if that creates a struggle in your mind, just stand back and keep relaxed. We have more than a physical body. We have emotions, and they sweep us first in one direction and then another, a high and a low, the good and the bad. Just be aware of any emotions that have been pressing in upon you, that are even now trying to press in upon you, just observe them. And if you can, as you can, just let them go. Anxiety, worry, fear, any kind of botheration. And being aware of your breathing, just breathe them away. You're cutting the links now between past events, future possibilities, and moving step by step into the present. Step back from the emotions. Yes, they may well come back, but their power will have been lessened a little bit because you have willed to let them go. And we are all receiving help from one another and from our true source as we seek to do this. Now be aware of what is happening in your brain, the incessant chatter that goes on. And as you become aware of thoughts, concepts, ideas that rush into the mind, just let them go. Don't struggle with them. Let them also be breathed away. Just hold in your mind's eye the picture of your body as still, relaxed, and controlled. Now we move to the still center, which is there deep within every one of us. Just let your consciousness center in the very center of your chest. Yes, the mind wanders, but as it wanders and as you become aware of its wandering, bring it back to the still, deep center within. And the still, deep center within one is the center within all. Let us then, in the silence, just hold our consciousness there. Silence gives birth to stillness. And it is within the stillness that true perception is born. And we come now to the point where we began, the awareness of the light within. The still center is a place of light. Let us hold our consciousness in that light. And the light within one is the light within all. So we see ourselves once more as linked together at the level of the heart in a network of light. And each one of us is a transmitter of that light, and that light is the love of God. And as we come to the end of our meditation, let us be aware once more of our bodies, and at the very center is the light. The light is always there. And the light always links us, whether we're conscious of it or not, with all others. And with the Divine Source. And I'm going to close this meditation by repeating the words of a prayer sometimes called the Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the Master knows and serves. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out. And may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. A word now about what we have described in the brochure as a period for recording impressions. In a moment, I'm going to suggest four questions, in answer to which you may find it helpful to record your own personal response. There are no right or wrong answers, and this is not an examination. And unless you decide otherwise, no one else will see what you record. The purpose of making this record of impressions is simply in order that at the end of the course, you may observe how some of your own questions have been answered, and how perhaps some are as yet unresolved, and how some new ones have arisen. And it may be that these recorded impressions will provide guidelines for future steps in your own spiritual pilgrimage. I shall now pose the four questions. After each one, there'll be a pause during which you may record your answer. And the first question I want to pose is this. very briefly, what is it that you are looking for in this course? What is it that you are looking for in this course? And if you're not sure, then state simply that. Now ask yourself the question, why do I think this is what I need? Why do I think this is what I need? Or you could write, why don't I know? Why don't I know? The third question. If you find what you're looking for, what difference do you think it could make to your life? If you find what you are looking for, what difference do you think it could make to your life? And the fourth question, what resolve or intention, if any, springs from your taking part in this first session? What resolve or intention, if any, springs from your taking part in this first session? And don't forget to bring your notebook with you to the next session. I want now to read a short passage from a book which many of you will know. For me, it has been from childhood, I think, the book of books. It is a novel beloved of all children who read it or have it read for them. I was very fortunate as a child to have it read to me by a village school teacher, whose reading conveyed something which has remained with me through the years. Let it speak to you now. Hear it in your own way. Let it, in fact, be an exercise in contemplative meditation. Kenneth Graham's The Wind in the Willows. Ratty and Molly are looking for the lost baby otter. Suddenly, the mole felt a great awe fall upon him, an awe that turned his muscles to water, bowed his head, and rooted his feet to the ground. It was no panic terror. Indeed, he felt wonderfully at peace and happy. But it was an awe that smote and held him, and without seeing, he knew it could only mean that some great presence was very, very near. With difficulty, he turned to look for his friend and saw him at his side, cowed, stricken, and trembling violently. And still there was utter silence in the populous bird-haunted branches around them. And still the light grew and grew. Perhaps he would never have dared to raise his eyes, but that though the piping was now hushed, the call and the summons seemed still dominant and imperious. He might not refuse were death himself waiting to strike him instantly, once he had looked with mortal eye on things rightly kept hidden. Trembling, he obeyed and raised his humble head. And then, in that utter clearness of the imminent dawn, while nature, flushed with fullness of incredible colour, seemed to hold her breath for the event, he looked in the very eyes of the friend and helper, saw the backward sweep of the curved horns, gleaming in the growing daylight, saw the stern, hooked nose between the kindly eyes that were looking down on them humorously, while the bearded mouth broke into a half-smile at the corners, saw the rippling muscles on the arm that lay across the broad chest, the long, supple hand still holding the panpipes, only just fallen away from the parted lips, saw the splendid curves of the shaggy limbs disposed in majestic ease on the sward, saw, last of all, nestling between his very hooves, sleeping soundly in entire peace and contentment, the little, round, podgy, childish form of the baby otter. All this he saw for one moment, breathless and intense, vivid on the morning sky. And still as he looked, he lived. And still as he lived, he wondered.